Blog Talk Radio.
The bloom, the swoon, the sugar's on your block. The planets let them flash in the corners of New York. The ghetto, the meadow, the Mr. Butterfly, the honey bugs dug and licked the honeydew. The sun, the kiss, the funk for a bit. The lips with the soul and some jazz for your hips. The puff, the buzz, the lids be heavy slick. The mecca get a rush when the beats be very thick. The hands, the feet, the brown baby treat. The femmes fumble loose and drink the doodle juice. The steps, the flams, the planets got damp. The people get a grip with the tape from a jam. A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk. The big, the fat, the cool, cool cat. The psychedelic soul puts the planets on the map. The chic, the love, the far out name. The lack of the funk's the main, why we came. The boogie gets done, the colors won't run. The funk hits the square, the kids gotta come. The pizza with the pop, the West Fourth stop. The crew after crew that do the grasshop. The true cool is black, the new school is fat. The beats by the ounce, the funk by the pack. The groove is the fix, the jitterbug fix. The hanging off the butts with the fat soul kicks. That's my nickel bag of funk, my nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
I said a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
Oh, a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk. The wide, the hip, dig it, it's the trip. The loops, the scene, and the funkifying it. The sounds, the pounds, the stacks, the flares. The baggy, baggy jeans, the naughty, naughty hair. The twinkle in the eye, the kisses living fly. The crew from the sky, the stuff to get you high. The action, the work for the rhyme. We goes the whole nine. The papers won't rot, the vapors get got. The streets get the buzz, the funk off your block. The opium groove, the smacked out soul. The kicking it live, the fat gotta roll. With my nickel bag of funk, my nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk.
Yeah, it's a nickel bag of funk, a nick bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
Nickel bag, a nickel bag. Ladybug will hit you with a nickel bag. A
nickel bag,
a nickel bag. Butterfly hit you with a nickel bag.
A nickel bag,
a nickel bag.
Doodlebug will hit you with a nickel bag.
A nickel bag,
a nickel bag.
DP's always hit you with a nickel bag.
Everyone, and welcome to Headliners Ball. This show's format gives both authors and audience alike the chance to entertain a deeper discussion regarding a choice selection of poems from the author's catalog of work. Headliners will perform pieces in their intended style. In turn, they will receive encouraging feedback from an all-inclusive panel of late-night poem callers. Additionally, there will be a chance for listeners to inquire about intended meaning, inspiration, nuance, poetic device, and any other interesting details that the author is willing to expand upon. My name is Jeremy F., and I am your host. As always, I am joined by my lovely and talented co-host, Pam Ray, who has just been dubbed in certain shipping circles because of her incredible amount of volume of eggnog she shipped over to Fiji. She has been dubbed, you ready for this? The Baron of French Polynesian Nog. Pam, how are you, my dear?
That I am doing great. That is right. You know, some people, they ship over the toilet paper and the paper towel, and me, I send out the eggnog. But I am doing
that
awesome.
A girl.
You know, as always, I'm looking forward to hanging out with you and a couple of other awesome poets and delving into the poetry.
Yes, as always, I know we always say this at the beginning of our shows, but yes, I am once again particularly excited about this night. We have one poet that has been with us on several shows with his contributions and his readings. And then we have another who's been a buddy of mine on the site for a long time, and I'm excited to hear his voice for the first time. So can you start us off with some introductions?
Absolutely. We have Lauren Giovanni, and we have Samuel Black. Welcome, gentlemen. Glad you could both be here.
Thank you very much. Good to see you guys.
Well, great to have you both. We're excited to start off the show. And so if you're not familiar with the format, we usually, or we always, celebrate one poet at a time. So we're going to start the first hour, Samuel. This time we're going to start with Laurent. I know that he has he's made some sacrifices to join us tonight, so we're going to respect his time and let him go first. Laurent, I'm excited to dive into your stuff, man, and I have your first poem up on the board ready when you are, An Empty Past.
Thank you very much. An Empty Past. Was, by the way, most of these poems are from several years ago, nothing absolutely current, as most of my stuff is read on the radio, so I decided to go with some slightly older ones. I hope you enjoy them. An Empty Past. The splintered sidewalk, pathway to an empty and crumbling home, image now in black and white. The speckled, crackled chrome of a solitary bumper, incongruous, laying in the street at curb's edge. Rusted fencing surrounding abandoned factories. Eyes poked out. Paint peeling. Roof leaking. Ghosts of an empty past. Remnants. Shells of dreams. An old despair still haunts the air. End poem.
It's going to be a treat, Lauren, listening to your milky voice all evening read these poems. I'm all a Twitter with how well you perform your work. Pam, can you start us off with some comments, please?
Absolutely. Wonderful read, Lauren. You know, I think this poem is just an absolute prime example of show, don't tell. You create the emotion and the atmosphere of loneliness, of death and loss. Without actually using those emotion words. I really like the speckled, crackled chrome of solitary bumper and cougarous laying in the streets at curb's edge, rusted fencing surrounding abandoned factories. It really kind of shows the idea of an Americana life dying away. And I would like to start out for you, Laurent, with the question of how did you get started in writing poetry?
Well, I had parents who were both college professors, so we had a rather large library. My father was impassioned in poetry, and he always used to tell me a story about how he had written a book of poetry, and it was going to be published the next day. He was serving in India at the time during World War II. He was in charge of all the education of American soldiers, all their training in the theater of China, India, and Burma. And the day before the book was supposed to be published, there was a catastrophic fire. It burned down. The publishing house burned down along with his poetry. And that always stuck in my head, so I decided I would start to write poetry, and did for years when I was young, you know, in school, and then stopped completely from about the age 22 on, only to recover many, many long years later when I discovered all poetry.
Very cool.
And what greater sign is there from the powers up above saying that the world is just not ready for your poetry than for the whole poetry house to burn down? What the heck? What a story.
I know. It was,
wow.
Well, yeah, he kept no copies. It was all carbon copies in those days, you know?
Right.
He didn't have copies for some reason. It was just a personal tragedy for him.
No kidding. That's a tragedy and a half. Wow. Samuel, would you like to comment on this poem?
Listening just to the reading, the mellifluous voice alone mesmerizing. A beautiful lyrical poem, and I love the voice, actually.
No, I agree.
Thank
very
you.
Well said. I totally agree with you, Samuel. No, Laurent has a particular way of presenting his poetry that certainly is a treat. Very well performed, Laurent. I really enjoyed it. And I really liked what Pam said as well, the show don't tell of this poem. Yeah, you get the emotive feel without hitting on easy buzzwords. You just set the scene, and it puts your heart in that exact moment that you're trying to describe. So that's very cool. And so my question to you, obviously, when you're creating the set list, you can go through your whole body of work. So why is this the first poem we're hearing tonight, and what does it mean to you?
Written, like, well over 2,000 poems. And I'm not very well organized. I wish I was. So finding a poem is very difficult. So I simply went to one of the lists and started plucking out ones that I liked without any rhyme or reason, just following the timeline from early to later. Just as long as I liked the poem, I picked it. No other reason beyond that.
And that worked. That works. If it's a serendipitous genius that brings us this first poem, I accept that answer wholeheartedly. That works, my friend. Very cool. Your next poem, World, is up on the board, ready when you are.
Okay. This is possibly my attempt at first really serious work, Worlds. As I walked, I passed a three-legged dog, hopping, sniffing in the gutter for a scrap. Wire thin, with ribs and sharp relief. His fate, his world. Little girl drawing on a cracked sidewalk, white chalk leaving intricate scrawls on the flat plain. Her vision, her world. Beggar, hunched in a boarded-up doorway, mouthing a bottle of gin, brown plastic bag nearby, containing his worldly goods, trifles, detritus, his reality, his world. Teenage couple on the steps of their tenement in deep embrace, lost in each other's lips and tongues, articulating their love, their moment, their world. Gun shop, grimy, anonymous, my destination, leaving 20 minutes later with a small package wrapped in brown paper, the end of my world. End poem.
Great read, great read. Go ahead, Samuel, you get to start us off this time.
Again, it's a very introspective piece that with the part about gunshot or rhyme, internal echo or rhyme, or did I miss you?
Maybe.
Yeah, that's what came to mind, yeah. So I like the imagery that created.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like that. I like that you picked up on that, Samuel. That's a very cool added device that went right over my head. I think that's cool to kind of have it being echoing, something that would be something so dramatic. Echo is what remains. So really cool way to pick up on that. I like that. This is cool. I mean, once again, very similar to what we talked about, what I commented at least about on the first poem, is you create the scenes and you create the emotive feel of the entire poem with simply description. I really like how this pounds at the end of each stanza with their world and how you brought that back. And you made it all segregated, but then that's the tie that binds. Very cool poem. Very, very impactful and very, very poignant, obviously. I really enjoyed it. So go ahead and tell me a little bit about your process, Laurent. I mean, when you're sitting down to write a poem, well, let's make it easy. How does a poem come to you? What does it take to make you want to sit down and write a poem?
I've discovered if I force a poem, if I force myself to write, usually it's not the best way for me to achieve what I want. I'll sit and just try and find a phrase that fascinates me, popping into my head, hopefully, and then I follow it. And I had seen this picture of this little girl drawing on the sidewalk and thought to myself that it's her world right there, that she was creating her world. And I just remember her world. And from her world came a lot of little worlds, other people doing other things. And to me, each individual is engaged in her world. So it's his fate, her vision, his reality, their moment, the end of my world. And that's just the way it evolved. And it just, after that, it flowed.
And I like that. I like the way that prompts can come from just your daily interactions with whatever goes on, and then it grows the way it did. It really blossomed. I just want to make a side note that Fazy has joined us on the board, and she also commented saying it was an amazing poem. So look for her additional comments as we continue through the night. Pam,
thank
what do you
have to offer?
Go ahead, Pam. What do you have to offer?
Yeah, this is definitely an amazing story, right? I like how you give us these different characters. First of all, you have the narrator, the one whose voice speaks all the way through and especially comes out in the end. And you have the beggar, the little girl, and the teenage couple. And each one of them is going through a different stage, represents almost a different stage in life. I really like beggar hunched in a boarded up doorway, mouthing a bottle of gin, brown plastic bag nearby, containing his worldly goods. You know, it just, it really speaks volumes with its imagery. So excellent, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Wonderful compliment, Pam. Your next poem, let me get my tech skills up to par here. Surviving Charlie is on the boards. Ready when you are.
Okay. Surviving Charlie. Third generation of my family to dwell in this darkness called Vietnam, on night patrol, steeped in sweat and regret. Finally camped in a sheltered clearing, cobra-free, jungle floor carpeted with stones and roots that bite as you lay, impossibly invisible, surviving Charlie and his friends. Night terrors, ambush, daytime misery, scorpions, leeches, mosquitoes, biting, painful, malaria carrying, vipers and constrictors, unlike the garden snakes of home and childhood, dangerous, deadly, leaves me too scared to sleep, too tired not to. The enemy searches for us, his presence in every shadow, every noise a warning, each silence suspicious, overladen with heat, stifling humidity, nature's sauna. Uncle, did you crouch as they crouch, waiting in the dense growth to kill you, unseen, shadowed and jungle-eyed? Grandfather, were you as terrified as I, as something moved across my legs in the dark, huddling feet clattering on my poncho? Towards dawn, the gun barrel emerges, loaded with dreams and scenes of home. Smoke curls as you puff and suck relief for your mind, easing stress with the enchanted herb of Nam. First light is tranquil as your sedated brain relaxes, not unvigilant, but not wire strung tight, not shaking or trembling, little boy afraid, but grown man cautious. Coffee somehow enters your small sphere of existence, enterprise undertaken by brothers you met only yesterday, whom you would die for tomorrow unless they are killed today. End poem.
I always love these battlefield poems. There's so much emotion. There's so many different angles to take it from. And then when someone can always, I know I've said this before, so I apologize, but if someone can find beauty and a way to take those of us who haven't served to that space, I don't know. It's always very meaningful to me. What I liked about this in the first half, definitely, as terrifying as being in a war or battlefield scene must be, what really was captured was the environment, and that's what really was getting the narrative voice. The stones and roots that bite you, the malaria-carrying vipers, the stifling humidity with nature's sauna and the heat. Besides the fact that you have someone out there playing peekaboo with you trying to kill you, you have to wrestle with all this other uncomfort and scared environment of something that's totally foreign, something uncomfortable, something that can hurt you too. And that just kind of, it took me there to a different way, a different level than other battlefield poems have in the past, because you're realizing that, yeah, this weight is compounded by a number of different factors. And so it really made it palatable to a different sense. And also the last line in the second to last stanza where you say, not a trembling little boy afraid, but a grown man cautious. I really like that line. I really liked how it's, you know what, this is fear. This is just heavy fear. I don't know. Or I don't know. Very well put together, my friend. I enjoy this poem a lot for all of those reasons. In your author's note, you say that it paid tribute to your grandfather and also your uncle. So do you feel comfortable expanding upon what this poem means to you personally?
Well, I was drafted by the French government and the American government within 2 weeks of each other. And as an ardent anti-war protester, it was kind of discomforting. I thought about joining the French Navy or the French Armed Forces, but they were not technologically equal to the United States. And I mistrusted their ability to keep their people safe, quite frankly. Plus the GI Bill, you served 4 years in the American military, would certainly help with college. So that's what I did. And the French government, who had drafted me, needed a letter from the American government saying that I was serving the American forces, and therefore they would then take me off their rolls. But the American government never did. I was supposed to go to college in France after a military service, but couldn't get a visa because the French government declared me a draft voter. So that changed my life entirely.
Wow. No, I love getting the added insight. I love getting the added history about what goes on behind these poems. It gives me all the more appreciation for what you put into these words. So,
yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't completely answer your question. I apologize for that. So once I had done that, my mother told me, you know, that your uncle and your grandfather both served in French Indochina, and your uncle was actually at the last battle of Dien Bien Phu when the French got kicked out of Vietnam. I just, you know, and here I was a third generation going back. So, yeah, there was a lot invested in this to try and do justice to their memory.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool, man. Go ahead, Pam. Jump in, please.
Absolutely. I would love to. This is a powerful write all the way through. I was looking at my comment, and I do remember that this one was one that almost left me speechless. It was intense, vivid, and raw. One of the things I really appreciate about your poetry, the last two poems you've read, but a lot of your poetry in general, is you tend to be a voice for people that need a voice. The homeless, the soldier, the veteran, and you tend to oftentimes touch on social issues. And so my question now, did you realize from a young age, of having grown up in a poetic family, did you realize from a young age how your poetic voice could be used, or did it take getting into, say, all poetry or a bigger audience to realize that you could use your poetry to be a voice for people who needed a voice?
I was far too scatterbrained as a youth to have those thoughts. But yes, when I got into AP, I discovered that there was a form that I could adopt, so to speak, in terms of writing, in terms of presenting, etc. AP really made it click for me, dear. LNP especially.
Very cool.
That's it.
And we'll always take nods and applause to LNP, so thank you for that. A great question. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, and in terms of what I write about, I'll write about almost anything. But yes, big picture ideas do tend to tempt.
Very cool. Very cool question. Samuel, you want to jump into the conversation?
Yes, indeed. There's a lot of this that I recognize. One of the things that I wanted to just point out that I think I certainly most appreciate in what I've heard, read so far, is that this poem particularly, it's you're reaching out across the generations to their grandfather and others, and it's connecting you and your emotions to empathically to your past and to your to someone else's past, and so you're creating this long line, sort of succession of these emotions, and to say not that you're connected, but we're all connected in this way, in this succession of these events in history, and you reach out with these emotions in concrete way and create some very deeply introspective imagery. It's difficult to explain, I guess, in any other way than the poem itself, because the way it connects your person to the child and to your own ancestors' emotions and feelings, what they might have been at the time, that the two of you sort of together across space and time.
That's a great comment. Thank you so much.
And I think it's cool that you pick up on it, right? Because if it's something so personal, something where Aran has taken his mind, like you said, Samuel, to some other place, and then connecting personally with his family members and then how it can connect with you, I mean, that really is kind of the universal, in my opinion, point of poetry, is take your own personal experiences and take what's in your gut and make other people react. So great comment. I really enjoyed that. All right. You are up once again, my friend. Winter's Abstract. Ready when you are.
Okay. Winter's Abstract. Frozen claws grip the snowscape. Iron icicles thicken like prison bars of unequal length. Winter's stormy breath releases eddies of snow, pacing, spinning, and achromatic pirouettes. Hymnal dancers performing a wind-driven allegro in abstract at noonday's twilight. Forest audience sheltering in wooden skyboxes, in root cellar seats, in cheek by jowl warmth. Erinus Erebus bound, angry skies, clear crystalline air hangs motionless. Silence covers a moonscape, horse-skating in the silver glow of night's horrible light. End poem.
I'm smiling all the way through this one. Great read. Pam, are you back with us? Are you ready to comment, or do you want me to come back to you? I think she's away. Samuel, you get to start us off.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I think I was on mute.
Yeah, no worries.
Yeah, this is very different from the previous, of course, and very dreamy as it alludes. I really like the winter's stormy breath, how that's described, and the dancers mimicking the wind. Plural is implied, and lots of that wonderful implied woven imagery.
Thank you. Very peaceful.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I know that I'm not alone during this holiday season when I say that we're definitely getting a nasty winter right now across the country. I know that we've been stuck in severe weather in the Northwest where I am, but again, I'm not alone. And so you can definitely get into the mood of this poem. But what Sigmund just said about being ethereal, to agree, I totally agree. Because what I loved about this was the language. The language had so many $5 words in it that just felt like icicles, the way you let them, this is going to be cheesy, the way you let them drip down the page. I mean, it was so cool, from achromatic pirouettes, the hymnal dancers, the allegro and abstract. I know I'm going to mispronounce half of the words that I love so much, so sorry, Laurent. Arrhenius, Erebus, bound, the coruscating in their silver glow. I mean, I had to get out the thesaurus to get through this, to understand the beauty of what you were painting.
It was one of those.
But it doesn't have. But it doesn't matter. I mean, a lot of times it doesn't matter, right? Because even if I'm not smart enough to be able to understand the definition of every word, I'm still there in the moment. And the beauty of how you place these gets it to that point where, like I said, after your read, I'm smiling the whole way through, because it definitely gets you in the feel of where you're going. And it's artwork. It's artwork through the sounds. It's artwork through the visual way that this thing comes together with those heavy words. And I wouldn't change a single one, because it gets me intrigued. And any time that someone can put vocabulary in a poem that has the reader not rolling their eyes but actually opening a thesaurus and trying to get deeper in with them, as I was with this, my first read, consider that a compliment, please. Realize that I want to know more, and I just want to get deeper in with where you're going. So I think it was beautifully written, and I enjoyed it for those reasons. Very cool.
Thank you.
During one of your earlier comments, and again, realize this is your hour, right? If I ever ask a question or get into something that you don't want to discuss, just say pass. It's totally acceptable. But you said you got away from poetry for some time during your life. Can you talk about that time and why you got away and what brought you back?
There was no time for dreaming. I got married. I had four children. I had to work. The life interrupted the dreaming. Is there was literally no time or inclination. It was only afterwards, when I had more or less retired, that I found time to recapture the essence of the English language, which I think is poetry.
Fair enough. I like how your answers to these questions are very simple. They come across as very matter of fact. I really appreciate that. Pam, did you have a chance to hear this poem?
You know what? I did not have a chance to hear it, but I did actually read it earlier today. You know, just amazing imagery as always. I love how you bring out the beauty and the power, the violence of winter, and remind us that nature isn't just something beautiful, it's something fierce. I really like hymnal dancers performing a wind-driven allegro and abstract at noonday's twilight. Obviously, it seems like in a lot of your poetry, you like to use a subtle use of alliteration and definitely imagery, and oftentimes it seems personification, at least from what I observe. But I'd like to know from you, what are some of your favorite poetic devices, either to use yourself or to read in other people's poetry?
Well, I like alliteration, but I find that long alliterative sentences seem forced, a little too formulaic. So, I mean, if the alliteration pops up, or if there's the opportunity to use alliteration smartly, where it belongs, naturally, so to speak, then I certainly will. As far as poetic devices, really I think just the normal ones. You know, you can do poems in couplets, or you can do it in strict four lines. You can alternate rhymes, A, B, A, B, or get a little more complex. Really, all the standard ones that any poet might use. I mostly write by instinct, though. So, you know, a lot of it is just the way it comes out as opposed to being written with a particular form in mind. A lot of times I'll discover what I've done after I've done it, if that makes any sense.
I get that. Very cool.
Yeah.
All righty, my friend, we've reached the halfway point. I know this hour flies by, but I want to give you a chance to shamelessly plug your work. Your work is available here on All Poetry under the name Laurent Yvan, Y-V-A-N. Is there anywhere else where we can find your stuff? Do you have anything published? Do you have any other sites that you visit with your poetry?
No, it's strictly All Poetry, and I'm too lazy to pull it all together to write any books.
Well, there's tons of people that are here to help you. I know I've said this again 1,000 times, but it's a gratifying experience. If you ever want to reach out to any one of us, other friends here on Late Night Poetry, I'm sure there's plenty of us that would be happy to help you. It's very easy to throw them together and put them on Amazon, and it's a gratifying experience. So if you ever need help, my friend, let me know. I will hook you up. So, because you definitely have some words that are worth putting in print, and there's nothing more satisfying to be able to hold something that you put together, in my opinion, my humble opinion. But yes, everyone, please look at Laurent's work here on All Poetry. He has quite a volume of work. We're going to try to get as far as we can through a set list tonight, but he's very talented, and we're lucky to have him. With that, go ahead. Did you have something to add?
No, I was going to say, indeed, I had read Laurent many of his poems before, I guess, before this tonight. I had sort of rang a bell when I started reading some of these again or seeing them again.
Yeah, he's a joy. He joins several of the other call-in shows that we have here on Late Night Poets, so you can catch him all the time. Samuel, I hope you become a regular caller, a regular member here on any one of the shows we have during the week, and you can celebrate him more and more because, yeah, it's a joy. It's a joy to hear him read his stuff. Your next one is up and ready when you are, Laurent. It's Archie visits a speakeasy. Sorry.
Yeah, this is I did a series about a series of these Archie poems from Archie and Mehitabel, by Don Marquise, the father of Archie. Basically, Archie is a very Libra poet reincarnated as a cockroach who labors over a manual typewriter in his boss's garage at night, flinging himself headfirst onto keys to write, unable to operate the shift lever, making punctuation and capitalization impossible. And because Don Marquise was a world-class newspaper writer, in those days, of course, everything was in columns, and in order to write his poetry and publish it, it had to be in column form, therefore the format. Archie visits the speakeasy. Boss, I visited a downtown speakeasy in a bad part of town. The rats are tough here. One whose name is Bald Pete has an evil eye out for me. He claims he used to be a city alderman who had the bad luck to be reincarnated as a rat. He is still mad about that and is now the borough bully. Claims he can fix what ails me. I didn't trust him and told him so. Infamous roach, says he, I would crack your carapace if you came close enough. He sniggered with bad intent. You are a little clam I would swallow in a single bite without butter or salt. Stinking cod, I said, your flea-ridden coat says otherwise. You are sick and will drop dead tomorrow, pale as a dead dog's eye, flushed into the gutter with the apple cores and orange rinds. He came at me after that, but couldn't fit in the crack in the wall through which I insulted his entire kith and kin. Prehistoric shrew, you won't get me so easily. Boss, he must be a Republican, because he began attacking his own in a fury. I crept away in the ensuing fracas. Make sure you register as a Democrat in the next election. The elephants are out of control. Yours in troubled times, Archie.
I love it. Go ahead, Pam. Start us off, please.
Oh, this is, yeah, absolutely great. I was really hoping, and I'm so glad we did, that we would get to this poem. And I highly recommend that anybody who can take time to check out Lauren's list of Archie poems that he has created, because, well, obviously, as he states, he did not create this character, which you should also check out the original, by Don Marquis. But Lauren, introduced so many to this character and to this author and the characters that they wouldn't have known about. I still remember when you and Rex and I did that show together on Archie and Don Marquis, and it was just so much fun. You know, this is a great example of your humor. And you really execute the style quite wonderfully. Now, obviously, you're a fan of Don Marquis, and I would like to know what other classic poets or authors have been an inspiration to you or that you enjoy reading.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of obvious ones like Ginsberg and Ferlinghetti and Eliot and I like Bob Dylan. I consider him a poet. Just, you know, the larger panoply of poets that anyone would read if they were interested in poetry. But I've always paid special attention to Dylan Thomas, who is by far and away my favorite poet.
Choices.
That's a heck of a list. And did you see that, Pam? Our boy Bob Dylan made the cut again. Everyone keeps bringing him up. That's so cool.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Samuel.
Good old Bob.
That's right.
Highway 61 revisited his great poetry from beginning to end.
I am not going to argue with you for 1 minute. No, I think the man is quite a lyricist, and I would definitely clarify him as a poet. Go ahead, Samuel. What do you have to offer?
Are you on mute, Samuel?
Yeah, we might have lost him. I'll give him another chance here in a sec. I'm not familiar with the Archie series. I admit it. I'm glad we got to this one. But, yeah, believe me, I'm going to be diving into exactly what you put together. When you finish your poem, I'm giggling because it's really not. It's not written humorous, but you have to say it's humor, in my opinion. Just because of the funny scene and the way you do it, I mean, it's just kind of that. I mean, I don't know how to put this correctly, Lauren. I mean, I know that you're writing this with a smile on your face as well, but it's not slapstick humor. It's not looking for a limerick, easy laugh. It's just one of those scenes where the humor of this is pitched in a sly way. It's pitched in a sly way, again, that's going to bring a smile to a novice reader like myself because you get that there's inside jokes going on. And the fact that you were able to carry this along a series makes it all the more intriguing to see where you went with this. I mean, even the title alone, as you started out, is Archie walks into a bar, basically, is what you're saying. And so it's a classic one-two punch, snare, hi-hat, right? So, I mean, you're setting it up that way, but you're not making it easy for anyone to walk into this knowing that that's what you're doing. And I like that. I like knowing that you're walking into a joke and then all of a sudden you realize that everyone's jovial around you and you realize that you could be part of it too. So I enjoy that. It kind of creeps in on you and had me smiling. Great write. How you like to have to make poems come to you naturally when you see something or something comes to you and you're not forcing it. Do you ever find yourself hitting that awful writer's block, and how do you get yourself through it?
A couple of times. And I've found that if I can find a way to let my mind loose, sometimes the muse is frozen as far as I'm concerned. It's jaw locked. It's got lock jaw. It won't talk to me. So I have to find a way to release the muse. So you try the obvious things, some good herb, a little alcohol, and you can sometimes find a space where you can release the muse, relax the muse, get the muse working again. If that doesn't work, time usually solves it, and reading usually solves it. Sometimes you just have to sit down and start writing gibberish, and all of a sudden a coherent sentence emerges, and you follow it in the hope that it leads you to a better place. That's basically what I do.
No, I like it. Beyond the external stimulants, I like the fact that you can't – do not coax the muse out. If the muse isn't ready, they'd be coaxed. So sometimes you do have to write gibberish. I like that. Putting pen to paper or keystrokes to the keyboard just to make something flow once again. I think it's great advice. I like that a lot. Samuel, are you back with us, my friend? Would you like to comment on this poem? I hope we haven't lost Samuel. All right. Well, we'll keep trying.
Back, Jeremy.
Am I here?
Yeah, there you are. We got you.
Oh. Okay. Sorry. I think I got dropped and re-added, rejoined.
Cool. Did you have a chance to hear the Archie poem?
Yes, I did, and then I got dropped.
All right, go ahead. The floor is yours.
I guess just to add, I like this a lot. I thought of it as the way I think of writing is like a method actor, and so I would try to inhabit other characters or objects and imagine myself from that point of view. And so I like the way this reads like a pitch for an animated episode that you projected these emotions, ideas, and anthropologically onto other things and created characters and sort of inhabited their minds with yours.
Nice comment.
Yeah, I like that. Great comment, my friend. All right, Laurent, your next one is up. Copas 1, 2, and 3.
Copas 1, 2, 3. Skeletons, autumnal. Wow. Let me start again. Skeletons, autumnal leaf, arabesque veins, so spare, tick-tock crisp, golden in death, taking flight on a windy ribbon of air, an abstract model of itself. Naked wood, tree-lit, clothe yourself, bark and branch to leaf, breathe island winds, carrying brackish sea spray, grow under ceiling skies, at beaches, crabbed, sandy foot. Xylosma, dressed in evening's flower garb, under a paper lantern moon, fragrance drenched, you sing of scents in oriental attire. Shrub or tree, destiny's choice. End poem.
Chapters can be tough for me at times. It's not always my favorite because I don't understand it. I don't understand the importance of that. But this, it works oh so well. I really love the fact that you did break it into chapters because you went with different – each one is beautiful in its own regard, and I can see the tie that binds. But I like the fact that the chapters encapsulate – they encapsulate a different taste on each one, and especially the second chapter, the personification that you put in on this one, it was nothing but smiles. It was very beautifully written. And then the third – starting off with Zolosma and then how beautiful it went again. But each one has its own – it's important to do the way you did it, I guess is what I'm saying. I'm finally getting appreciation for breaking apart poems into chapters because I see how it can be so powerful, and it lets my mind rest for a second, right? If this had been without stanza breaks or if it had just had simple stanza breaks without the titles of chapters, I might not have let my brain – rest as much as I did because of how you formatted this. So I really appreciate it for that. It's beautifully written, regardless of how you choose to format your poetry. But yeah, that jumped out at me. I really appreciated that. Very cool. I want to give you the chance to talk to the rest of us here at AP for a second. Do you have any sage words of wisdom about writing? Do you have any kind of scholarly advice you'd like to pass on to the rest of us about your writing process or anything at all about writing or even your form of poetry?
Yeah, I guess I do. I don't know if you're familiar with Robert Heinlein, a famous author, science fiction author. Wrote things like Stranger in a Strange Land, Marvelous, any number of other books. And he always claimed that he never rewrote a word. Come to find out later on in life that he was lying, that he rewrote quite a bit. And I find that I find myself rewriting a lot of poetry. I'll go back after it's composed, after I've published it online, and then go and fix this line and fix that and do this and just come up with a much better poem. It doesn't always work, but sometimes I'll start off like with a 5 or a 6 if you care at all about auto rank, and work it without regards to trying to achieve a higher score. Then I'm done and I'm satisfied and I look and it's a 10. Now, that doesn't mean anything really in the long run, because I think auto rank is a little strange, but it has its benefits. So I would say don't hesitate to rewrite, reword, and edit your stuff. Well, it usually gets better.
I love that advice. Yeah, no, I have a love-hate relationship with auto rank, and sometimes I get kooky out there just to spite auto rank's face, spit in auto rank's face, or be spiteful of the whole program because I can't ever get to where I want to be with it. But I love the fact that you don't, that you're not afraid to say that you revisit poems, because I certainly do as well. I think that's great advice. Pam.
All right. I see. Well, if I can just interject real quickly.
Yeah, go ahead.
I gave you a lot of poetry, and it's quite obvious that we're not going to get through it all in my hour. So if there is one poem left to be read, I would like to read the last one on my list.
Sure.
Other than that, go ahead.
Yeah, we'll have time to do it. We'll make sure we get to that one. No problem. Go ahead, Pam. Would you like to comment on this one before we move on?
Yes. Well, first of all, I have to say that you are the first person I've ever known, Jeremy, who calls sections in a vignette chapters. I have never heard that before. And now I can't figure out if you're the one person that's right. And everybody else
no.
has been wrong.
No. That is my ignorance. That is my ignorance shining through once again. Don't doubt that.
Well, it's a good description. It's a good description
yeah.
of it, though. That's what it is, if you think
it
about it.
It is. Absolutely. I thought it was great. I never
like
thought of them before in the chapters. But, this is amazing. Beautiful imagery. I really love how this this speaks on the beauty of trees and the importance of allowing them to renew and regrow. And I love your little AN, trees have always fascinated me. And because I know you want to get to that next poem, I'm going to save a question for after you've read your last poem.
All right.
Yeah, we're not really rushed for time, guys. We can always extend beyond our 2-hour time limit, so we're okay. Go ahead, Samuel. What do you have to contribute?
Well, I thought that it struck a chord, your talk about where this comes from, and I thought I could add there is that it's as when you edit a lot of things, we all do, but then I think it's just a matter of when the poem ages as we age and matures as we mature. And so that's my explanation for editing things when I go back to look at something with different perspectives years later, like some of these poems I have but today. But then I it was one of the comments I thought I was going to make, but I got sidetracked. But maybe I'll remember it.
No worries, no worries. The last one you wanted to get to, Laurent, was Ashes of Long Ago. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. I'm putting it on the boards right now for everyone to enjoy. All righty. We are ready when you are.
Okay. Ashes of Long Ago. I swim in the sea of ashes of long ago, choking on the memory of familial bones, ghosting paths of the ancestral home I was wrenched from, cut, excised brutally from our tribal body without remorse or thought. I swim in the sea of ashes of long ago, staring with sightless gaze, swinging by corded noose from cottonwoods, punished for pride, a desire for respect that pushed the patience of these devils who call themselves men. I swim in the sea of ashes of long ago, singular clouds flying in a once familiar sky, raining implausibly onto the mud covering my body's dust, watering me as if I could grow again, fodder for the lash that never pauses. I swim in the sea of ashes of long ago, memories wafting over the long waters, spirit returning home to the bright colors of family where my spear hangs, hungering for my hand and the swift foot of my throat. Ashes of long ago, blood cement that never dries, pooling in dreams that soak into an ochre earth, lost to the strands of my brown life, forever raveling and unraveling. Ancient spool of thread tumbling downhill from the womb of the world, my Africa. End poem.
Great read. Great read. Go ahead, Pam.
Yeah, that was definitely a wonderful read. I'm so glad you could join us tonight, Laurent. You know, I like how this delves into an individual, but not more than the individual. It delves into the history of a people and of a nation. A wonderful example of a first-person narrative. I swim in the sea of ashes of long ago, singular clouds flying in a once familiar sky, raining implausibly onto the mud, covering my body's dust. Just a strong imagery, excellent look at history and culture, beautifully written. And I, oh man, I feel like all of a sudden I'm running out of questions, so I will go ahead and steal the casserole dish question from Jeremy. And that is, can you tell I'm tired? Laurent, I have handed you a 9x15 casserole dish in which you can put in any ingredients that make up Laurent the person and Laurent the poet, and they do not have to be food. What are you going to put in that casserole dish?
Emotions, truth as I see it, a depth of image that is easily recognizable by everyone, a hint of scatterbrainedness, for which I'm famous. ego, I think every poet has some level of ego. These are all things that would make me up. The poetry just follows those prompts, so to speak. Whatever falls within those particular ingredients manages somehow to swim to the surface, and I just type it out.
They're getting too good, Pam. They're getting too good at answering our casserole dish question. That was great.
We have to come up with new questions to stunt them. That's all there is to it.
I think people are practicing because they're nailing them. They're knocking it out of the park. We're trying to catch them off guard. They're nailing it. Very cool answer. Go ahead, Samuel. What do you have to contribute?
I like how it has this, it's a very ethereal, dreamlike swirl, yet there's the very serious undertones. And it does appear that you have put a lot of your own experience in here, especially with things like As You Long Go, Blood Cement That Never Dries, and particularly like Spirit Returning Home to the Bright Colors of Family Where My Spear Hangs, Hungering for My Hand and the Swift Foot of My Throw. That's a soldier. That's the soldier. So many things like that. And there's obviously a lot of you in here in the ethereal, and the way you reach out with that from you to these words, through these words. And I think the comment I was going to make on a previous one would apply here as well, that some words are loaded for bear, some words are loaded with bear. And you do a very fine job. You do a very fine job.
I appreciate that comment. That was well done.
And, I love this one, too. I think that was a great comment, Samuel. I totally agree with everything you just said. But what I want to do is I want to kind of turn this one over to you, Lauren. I mean, this was such a powerful poem. It does feel very personal, and it was important for you to include this in your set and even in your performance tonight. Go ahead and tell us a little bit more about this if you're comfortable doing so.
Yeah, this is one of those poems where everything stemmed from title Ashes of Long Ago. The phrase entered my mind, and it interested me. And I was trying to figure out what I had meant by ashes of long ago. And then, you know, what do I do with these ashes? Well, you could swim in them. So the first line was, I swim in the sea of ashes of long ago. And then the thought struck me, because I've always been horrified by this country's fairly brutal beginnings in terms of how it got to where it's getting, to where it's gone, in terms of the labor used to create this country, the various peoples that we ground under our foot, under our feet to get to where we are. Certain nationalities were used for certain purposes, African slaves being a fairly obvious one. If you ask who built the railroads, the amount of Chinese people who work on the railroads is staggeringly large. You can thank them for the railroads. I mean, they were treated brutally, but at least they weren't slaves, right? And it struck me that I should speak for the black man. And then I said to myself, well, who are you to speak for the black, for a black man, for a native who had been stolen from his tribe? You know, do I have the right to do that? I haven't suffered what they have suffered. And I thought I should make the attempt anyhow. And I guess it turned out all right.
Yeah, I'd say hell yeah, it did. I mean, because it does. It feels very personal. It feels like you were part of Africa's struggle throughout the millennia, which obviously...
Well, that's exactly what I was struggling with. Did I have the right to do that, you know?
I think so. I think so, because I think no matter whatever voice, it's definitely, I think so. The way you put this is very comfortable in me, and knowing enough about you to know that you might not have experienced all of this, but you're definitely paying tribute and doing it with respect. So I think it's a beautiful poem.
Mm-hmm.
Well done.
Thank you.
Everyone, Laurent Yvonne is here on All Poetry. He is a constant staple here on Late Night Poets. Please read the rest of his set list, and if you're not totally taken in, I'm sure you will be. Please just dive into the rest of his work, tap his page, and read his body.
A last word, if I might. My favorite shows have always been after midnight, or a lot of my favorite shows have always been after midnight. I just find it very, very difficult these days to stay up from 12:30 to 2:30, although tonight I will be doing that on a regular basis because with the pills I take, et cetera, I'm never sure whether I'm going to be awake or asleep after midnight. So with that apology, there you go.
No need for apologies, my friend. You're a wonderful headliner. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for contributing. And don't feel bad. Pam and I usually sleep about 15 minutes into the show and let everybody else take over. So don't feel bad. All right, everyone. We're going to switch gears. I'm excited to give this guy the spotlight. I've been friends with Samuel Black for some time here on All Poetry. I'm excited to be able to talk to him here in person. So, Samuel, my friend, thank you for making yourself available. Your first poem, November, is up on the boards and ready to go when you are.
Oh, well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's hard to follow such an incredible person and voice. I put together this list internally and didn't think that I was obviously going to read all of these in the list. I had sort of thought I'd maybe randomly choose from. As I was going through some of these I haven't actually even seen in a decade. And I thought as I started doing that, I would grab a few that would be more representative of what I was doing 10 years ago and something more representative of kind of what I'm doing today. And one of those was that it was a very old one, I guess you could say, is Nothing is Meaningless. I don't know if it's in the list.
Let me with you, buddy. I'm trying to see if I can find it. If not, I can go to your profile and find it.
I can.
If it's possible, right. Can we go to November 1st and then I can come back to Nothing is Meaningless so I don't have 5 minutes of dead air here trying to catch up with
you? Surely. Okay, so November, I have this up here now. This is from 2015 in November. Okay, so this is obviously something that was fresh on my mind at the time. So here we go, November. There was work after Ghosty's cat got bit by a raccoon and lost some fur. The scars, the open bites invited horsefly eggs, so he had to be put down, a divot in the rain under a calico hen barn, weak long limbs stretch, stripped, and shake in fog like mud puddles ahead of steps, a shape to stomp dry as rain returns to fill another.
Go ahead, Pam. You get to start us off.
All right. Well, first of all, Samuel, wonderful read there. I really like the formatting of this poem and how you've made the words and the phrases spread out and have almost this, it's like they're floating in space. It's like they're falling snowflakes or falling leaves. And they really dance across the page. I noticed in a lot of your poetry, you have profound thoughts, but put in wonderful, straightforward, simple language, stuff that many people can relate to. The mention of, I really like in the rain, a divot in the rain under a calico tin barn, weak long limbs stretched, stripped, and shaking fog like mud puddles ahead of steps. You really show us so much of the details that's a part of the month of November. And I would like to know how you got started in writing poetry.
Oh, well, thank you very much. How I got started? I guess I just started writing. And then so far haven't completely stopped. At a young age, I suppose I thought I would. I read a lot, and I thought I would try to play with words to do something like those whose writing I liked and admired. And I started out with a dictionary and still have it.
You know what? I find, you know, you don't need to carry a dictionary around nowadays, but back, you remember back before, you know, the internet was really big and we had everything at our fingertips online. I remember I had a thesaurus, a dictionary, and I even had a baby name book even before I had kids, because you could find names for characters. Sorry, I didn't, but yeah, no, I get that. I do. You got to have your handy dandy tools with you, like a dictionary.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
cool,
that's a
answer.
Good point. That's a good point. This was all before, long before the internet. Long before any personal computers. A dictionary was very important. A book, actual physical book, was very important. And I had few, but one that was the most important to me was my dictionary. And it was an old dictionary passed down from my grandmother. So words as they are, they evolve. And so so my words sometimes would be old and sometimes new. And that old dictionary became really an important thing for me, and the cover wore off, and I put to fix it, I glued some cloth to the back to fix the binder. I think I tore a T-shirt apart, used some rubber cement, and then I used the cigar box for the cover, and I still have that dictionary.
Yeah, great job.
I love that. Great question, great answer. I love that conversation. Go ahead, Lauren.
And sometimes the words, as you write them, dictate how they will appear. And sometimes we just start off very formulaically, you know, four-line stanzas, et cetera. Other times the words insist on separating themselves for one reason or for another, usually for effect, to emphasize something, et cetera. But I like a number of things about this poem, but it strikes me, having been a cat lover all my life, you ever watched a cat outside, the way they tend to amble and wander from side to side and revisit places and et cetera, looking for senses? And it seems like these words are doing exactly that, following the meanderings of a cat. And it is about a cat, but it's more than that. But still, it's very effective, and I like it.
Okay, thank you for that. That's pretty much exactly right. It's kind of like putting a spotlight on a small life, a small being, and giving it the spotlight, and its life was small, short, but it can be illuminated, and hopefully illumination, you know, is important.
It is.
Great comments, and I see that. That's how long you and I have been chatting here on AP. I see that back in 2015, you and I had quite a conversation about this poem. Yeah, I really love this format. I love the fact that that poets dive into this experimental formatting poetry. Again, personally, selfishly, that's what got me into poetry, seeing what Cummings used to do, who first introduced me to the fact that it doesn't always have to be ABBA. Classic formed poetry. So that's what drew me to your artwork originally, was the fact that you would take these experimental risks that might not be picked up on the average everyday reader right away, and it takes a little bit more time for someone to invest to understand what you're trying to do. So yeah, buddy, I mean, that's why I'm excited about our conversation tonight. I think there's going to be a lot of these poems that we have from you that you're going to be able to give us more and more insight. Because I like the fact that you tend to stretch the bounds of what is poetry in terms of a classical definition and make it something more of an experience that not everything else offers. So I'm excited to go through the rest of your stuff. I also like the story about the dictionary. I know some of my favorite books have some staples and tape and some interesting things to keep them, but that makes them all the more precious. So I like that story as well. Very cool. I have your next one. Where is it? I think you would specifically ask for that poem, right? Nothing is meaningless.
Yeah,
is that what you were
being, yes, Jeremy. I think that was one of the older ones in the list that I went through.
Okay.
The one I just read was from 7 years ago. This is close to 10 years ago.
Okay.
And
cool. I got so, Nothing Is Meaningless ready for you. So if that's where you want to go, that's what we will do.
Okay. Again, this is something that's where I was and sort of an example maybe later where more like where I am today. But anyway, this was something along the lines of what you were saying. It's called Nothing Is Meaningless. Don Diego slips down the sides, feet in white, patent leather brogues, like a lamp in a green suit, two sizes too big. But new shoes tap heel toe, his wide brim Romeo, just got a jingle and a pop his gold chain pocket watch to show those electric fools down at the shipyard, 2 weeks of whales canned by overseas threads and make your steps rise. But they laugh loco because they know he's just a moonflower, crane through boardwalk cracks. He'll bloom at the King's Inn tonight, soak up mojitos with long-legged daisies till some rough boot mosquito scuffs up his wingtips. But he won't get punched till tomorrow early when his petals curl into gray overhauls and hit that time clock.
Great read. Go ahead, Laura. Start us off, please. Laura, you on mute with us, buddy? You still with us?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was on mute. I apologize.
No worries.
Go
ahead.
I cleared my throat. Yeah, where was I? Oh, I happened to notice that the first comment showing as a one-word comment and the word superb, and I might echo that. This poem is a joy to read, number one. I love the character of Don Diego. I love his description. I like things like new shoes, tap, heel, toe, because you could see him doing that. You got some well-dressed dandies who really accent their walk, and they click that heel, and they tap that toe, and they get dressed up in the nines. And when you call him a wide-brimmed Romeo who's got a jingle and Papa's gold chain pocket watch to show those electric fools down at the shipyard, 2 weeks of welds can buy overseas threads, make your steps rise. Yeah, they're not going to jump all over him that night, but boy, when he comes to work the next day, they're going to give him hell. I love your phrasing of this. Things like moonflower, you'll bloom at the King's Inn, soaking up mojitos with long-legged daisies till some rough boot mosquito scuffs up his wing kicks. That's great writing.
Well, thank you.
Welcome.
Wonderful compliment, Lauren. And I just got to echo it because I agree. I mean, there is such vernacular language in this, and you pitch it so smooth. I mean, you get into Don Diego, and I picture him right from the jump. And the way, again, you throw any kind of slang in here, it rolls. And it's not only because it fits contextually so well, but you dabble some sly little poetic devices here and there. There's a little bit of rhyme. There's a little bit of alliteration. There's a little bit of assonance. And you do just little sprinkles, just little dashes of salt, if you will, to make it all the more smoother as you kind of go through this. And it's kind of fun because I keep using the word smooth because I feel this character is smooth, and I feel that it's the way that it's worded is smoothly written. But your formatting and the way you presented it has a lot more punch to it. There's a lot more jabs and ducks and bobs and weaves to it, which is kind of cool. And so that's, again, that's why I was giggling when you performed it, because it caught me off guard, but it worked again so well. So I appreciate having you here tonight because things like that take this artwork to another level when I see how the original author interprets his format and would present a poem. So very cool, man. My question to you on this one is tell me about your process when you sit down to write a poem. What does it look like?
It'll vary. Sometimes I'll be thinking of a character. I'll see something and I'll want to inhabit it. And this was one of those characters that popped out in my head. And I was probably mostly at that time doing this method acting kind of thing I was talking about earlier, where I kind of put myself into a character and see it from that character and write what they see.
I I like that. I like that imaginative ability to take your eyes and go through someone else's and then create something so cool like this. Great answer, man. I like that. Pammy, did you have a chance to comment on that? Are you back with us?
I am back, yes, and I did get a chance to hear that. You know, what's really going to bother me is there's this poet, this poet from like the 1970s, I think he's Hispanic if I remember right, and I'm just, that style reminds me so much of. And, you know, I know what's going to happen is it's going to come to me at like 4 a.m. and at which point I will have to message one of you just to say, Eureka, I got it. I know what
don't worry,
reminds me of.
We're all going to stay on the line until you come up with a name.
It could take a while, just warning you. But no, this is a strong right. It was a great performance, you know, and I like that you brought up twice now method acting and really getting into a character. Now, that seems to be something that's really important to you when it comes to poetry and the way you perform it. I did enjoy especially how this had a very jazz, very beat poet, very hip-hop feel to it. So did you find yourself interested? Did you become interested in performance, you know, like the method acting after you started writing poetry, or was this something that you were have been involved with in other areas of your life?
This writing is not something that intersects or that intersected with my life, my career, professionally. It was more of a hobby and outlet. And your comment was very insightful, Ori, about how it reminds you of someone from the 70s, and it did me too, rereading it. And then I was thinking, what was I thinking then? And I was reading probably things from Neruda and Cesar Vallejo, and those things probably came out, you know, sort of bubbled up from the heat, if you will, and into that kind of jazzy rendition.
That makes sense. Okay, cool.
All righty, brother man. I'll go wherever you go. Just please be kind to me. And if I pause for too long, Pam's going to have to start singing. So where would you like to go next?
Oh, okay. Let's see. How about another one that's – let's see. Yeah, that's kind of old. And then I'll go with something more new. How about Hobo Poem? That is on the list.
Yeah, I know. I saw it. There it is. I found it. You're lucky, Pam. You are lucky because I'm going to do anything I can to get her to build up some songs, guys. So if I pause for too long, it's on purpose. Hobo Poem is up and ready when you are, Samuel.
Okay, so Hobo Poem. Now that I've tightened down to the teeth of it, the words chomp and stamp, the jaw is clamped, so molars grind, saw the last meter off the plank that started this in the first place. Could I pat the poem on its head and send it off to die? Maybe let it find new creeks in the floor to chat with, or inhabit vacant funnel webs in the corner of the baseboards? I won't alliterate the poor piece as if I'm slapping a confession out of it. I'll find rhythm outside in the rain, on the water of a bird bath, where surface tension drums. But if that's no place, then where? This homeless drape of letters looking down at its shoes. Perhaps a trip out west for a back against the wind and sun-kissed cheeks. Nah, there's too many folk out there with that rosy glow, done up with spurs, riding the bull and whipsawing a hat for the crowd. This one wants to be alone, but not profoundly. So it's mad with private language among the cacti and dunes of stars, mumbling infinitudes no one understands. He wants to be a harmonica with pockets full of moments to sing about in a boxcar hitched to the rails of life, so he can laugh with his adventures as it composes possessive smiles, waves postcards, fly fishes with self-made hackles, wakes before dawn, and travels light.
Great read. And I'm just going to warn everybody right now, you're going to want to put Samuel in a box and say, you know what, this is written in the spirit of Billy Collins, or maybe he's even a beat poet with his smooth vernacular style and way he gets you in the mood. But he's going to show you guys some stuff later that's going to blow your mind, because Samuel's not afraid to expand upon his different styles of poetry. Buddy, I love this one. I apologize like I did for Laurent. I'm sorry I'm giggling, but it's only because of out of joy for the poem that I just heard. I like how you objectify poems from the beginning of this. I always love when people celebrate the way words sound, the onomatopoeic feel of them, and I feel like you did that in a second with Chomp and Stamp. So I'm smiling from the beginning. Any poem that recognizes it's a poem and then celebrates the fact of loving what it is. I don't know, this just sounds kind of cheesy the way I'm trying to praise you on this, but I like poems that are happy to be poems and kind of dance down the page in their fun with words, their fun with sounds. And then even in this case, you tell a little bit of a story as well. And so I think you hit it from all angles. I think you did Billy Collins, who doesn't make my top five, sorry to say, but I think you did him proud, because I think you one-upped him with this one, because I really enjoyed this poem. Very cool, man. Very cool.
Thank you very much. Yes, I mentioned Billy Collins for proper reference somewhere in the comments, or I think on the poem. But yes, that was a direct influence. And at the time, I was doing things like that. And then what I was talking about in terms of inhabiting a character, this is one of those meta poems where I inhabit a poem itself and give it a character.
Yeah, very cool. I like that. And then do you have any other, I mean, you've said Neruda, you've said Collins, do you have any other classic poems, great poems, famous poets that tend to influence your work?
Quite a few. I mean, I've been probably a long time tonight mentioning names, but some of the beat poets, a lot of the beat poets actually are big with me, and my mind is blanking right now, but I think that that era was it particularly influential to me in my start, because it was probably not quite my era. It was a little bit before my time, but it resonated.
And that's cool, and I think it does for a lot of poets. I mean, I think I love the beats, and I love the show that Pam and Rex put on about the beats, and I like the fact that they're still influencing many writers today, because I think it's justified for sure. There's a lot of fun, and I can see that come through in your work.
Yes, thank you.
Go ahead.
That was one of those that I was – I just want to add that I guess you could say more experimental for me, and I was trying to just expand.
Very cool. No, because I think you do that a lot, man. I mean, knowing your work very well, I think you do a lot of experimentation, and I think that's it's brave, and it's cool that it's so successful so many times, at least for my eyes. Go ahead, Pam.
Yeah, I thought it was really cool that you wrote to were inspired by the Introduction to Poetry by Billy Collins. You know, that has to be, I think, one of my favorite humor poems. And I really like poetry that's about poetry and about the process of writing. And this has a wonderful, your poem here has a wonderful biting humor to it. I won't alliterate the poor piece as if I'm slapping a confession out of it. I'll find rhythm outside in the rain on the water of a birdbath where surface tensions drum. But if that's no place, then where? It is a wonderful, as you and Jeremy talk about, an experimental style of poetry where it finds its own rhythm and its own flow rather than finding it in, you know, necessarily in a forced poetic devices. And so, but when it comes to poetic devices, obviously it seems like you're very much a free verse poet, but do you have favorite poetic devices that you occasionally like to use or perhaps that you like to read in other people's poetry?
Thank you, and good question. There's a lot of, I guess I try to just, they're all tools, and I don't limit myself on the tools that I can use. I try to keep my mind open and just explore and come up with, you know, try out new things. And that poem, Hobo Poem, was a bit of a, from an exploration and a showcase of some of those kinds of things, like the alliteration, near rhyme, and the sort of poem is a meta poem to celebrate poem and poetry.
Very cool.
Go ahead, Laurent. What do you have to offer?
Well, I love the idea that he wrote, that he anthropomorphized a poem in the same way that we are brought up and taught life, and then sent off into the world to live our lives. So has this poem been created and sent off to die, he says. What will happen to it? I found it enchanting that you had it visit creaks in the floor or funnel webs or taking it to the water of a bird bath where surface tension drums and then ask the question again, but if that's no place, then where? And sometimes we are just like that poem. If this is not the place for me, then where? This homeless drape of letters looking down at its shoes. Again, a wonderful phrase that really stands out. I like the wanderingness of it, the apparent aimlessness, which is not so aimless, I might say. But it's guided. It's guided right towards a wonderful end. Fly fishes with self-made hackles, wakes before dawn, and travels light, just like a good hobo should. Well done.
Go ahead, Pam. Give us your aha moment. I see it on the board there.
Well, I wasn't going to interrupt with it, but since you insist, I just couldn't let it go, so I had to look it up. And the poet I was talking about from the previous poem that you read was Miguel Pinero. And if you don't know his work, I highly recommend checking it out.
I will definitely look into it. Thank you.
All righty, Samuel. We've reached that halfway point, so we can take a breather. And you can go ahead and shamelessly plug yourself. I mean, if you have any published work anywhere else, anything in print form or any other websites that beyond All Poetry we can experience your gift?
No, I don't have anything else, really. This is it. This has been
Hobby.
My professional career was quite different. I'm retired now, and I just do this as a hobby and post on All Poetry.
Well, I'm going to give you the same lecture then that I gave Laurent, because I think you guys are both very talented. I think it's very satisfying to put it in print form, put it out there for the world, make yourself a buck or two. I think I might have made myself $1.50 in all the years I've had stuff going. But no, I mean, if you ever have the chance,
all
really
right,
easy to do. It's really easy to do, and I appreciate both of you. I think you should both look into it. I think you definitely have an audience, at least in me, so you'll have one guaranteed sell if you do sale if you go ahead and publish your work. No, great
stuff,
man.
Thank you.
Go ahead. I'm sorry to keep stepping on you. What do you have to say?
Oh, no, I was just saying thank you very much, Jeremy.
Yeah, of course, my friend, of course. Where would you like to go next?
Something more recent, perhaps. It's called Now. I think it's toward the end of the list that I sent.
Found it. Man, you are making it just in the nick of time every time, Pam. You better get those vocal cords ready. All right. Now is up on the board and ready to go when you are.
Now, where, oh, where did the wind did go? Ghost story of spring, a whisper on a reed, sway gives way to sway, a feel the lines to feel, a breeze.
Beautiful brevity. Go ahead, Pammy, start us off, please.
Yeah, this is definitely a beautiful brevity. Not a single wasted word. You know, I really appreciate when people can write a strong brevity. And I like that this pays tribute to the wind and to all the different ways that it can be represented as a ghost story, as something that moves trees and grass and, you know, as something that just, it's almost like it also can be a metaphor for an extended metaphor for a person who travels, is a traveler and just is temporarily a part of your life and makes an impression, you know, which I guess is kind of contradictory to the title now, but that's just the thought that came to my mind. And I do appreciate and enjoy the one word title. I thought that was great. And I can't really think of a question at this time, but wonderful brevity and very well done.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you. This
go ahead, Lauren. Go ahead. I'm sorry to step on you, Samuel. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Samuel. I interrupted you. Go ahead, Samuel.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to add to that comment that this being a newer one, it also made me reflect on the older ones, and I can see a bit more of what I was doing then and now, and that is in terms of inhabiting solo writers that I have read and wanted to maybe think like. I tried to do that same sort of method acting thing and project my mind into how would they write the poem, like the Billy Collins poem. And then this one, I think, is a nod to A.R. Ammons, who wrote a poem, has the lines, the reeds give way to the wind and give the wind away. And that had an impact on me at that point. And I had read it many years before, but then for some reason, suddenly, I wanted to try to be like that poem. And so that poem came out.
Very cool explanation. I like that. Go ahead, Lauren.
Yeah, in terms of a brevity, to me sometimes a brevity is a distillation of an entire larger poem. You take the phrase ghost story of spring, and then the words that surround it, which make a stanza, and you move on to the next stanza and the stanza after that. What are you really adding when you have such a combination of words as is given us here on the page? I mean, I don't know how many words it is, 20, 30, but the essential essence of the entire poem, ghost story of spring, a whisper on a reed, sway gives way to sway. Those words just describe so perfectly the breezes and the winds. And then to say a field aligns to feel a breeze, in my head I could see a flat plane of earth and everything that grows on it tilting to feel the breeze a little bit better. That was such a wonderful image, such a wonderful suggestion of movement to feel the wind, to feel its own movement. Just a marvelous, marvelous brevity. Perfect brevity, really.
Thank you.
What a hell of a comment, Lauren. I really like that. And I like that. I like the thought that a brevity is almost a contraction of a longer poem. I don't know how you put it. You put it much more eloquently than I can. But wonderful comment. I really like that. And yes, I remember this one. I remember this one a lot. And I'm not a big fan of brevities. Laurent might have just turned me into a fan of brevity. So from his perspective of him, this one goes a long way. And like I said, I commented back in May when you published this. I really love that Sway Gives Way to Sway. It does get you in the mood quickly, and it holds you there. And I think that can be difficult on a brevity without being trite. And this one seems to do it effortlessly. I really enjoy this poem. I'm glad you shared it with us again tonight. And my question to you is, a lot of the stuff that you put out there, a lot of the stuff I think you are really challenging your audience. I feel challenged a lot of times because you have such a diversity in your styles, and you really do experiment a lot. And you do it unabashedly. You do it with a bold sense of writing. And I'm always amazed at how successful you are at not sticking to the same 1, 2, 3 dip, step, twirl. You know, you're not afraid to get funky with it when you want to. And so my question is, I'm sorry it's so long-winded, is how often do you think of your audience? Are you doing this? What is poetry doing for you? And are you worried if and when the audience is not keeping up or paying attention or is ready to go where you go?
Well, I suppose if I were I do consider the audience because I am part of the audience for other poems, you know, sort of think about that through the process and how it sounds to me, reading it out loud always doesn't really work for me if I can't read it out loud. And so the sounds are very important and visual is very important. But the meaning is the most important, and the presentation can take a back seat, although it does often, to me, help like a tool to clarify or add something to the reading of it. And a lot of line breaks and placement is more intentional than maybe perceived, and perhaps even in some cases it's done to sort of from the reader's perspective, if they don't understand or don't, is to help sort of like a guide to line break and enforce the reader's mind if they don't read it out loud to read it internally the way I would read it out loud, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. No, great in-depth answer. I like that. I like that a lot. All right, brother man. Where do you want to go next?
See. How about something also more recent? I think the same, this year. A View Through a Tube.
Okay, I got that one. And for everyone else, it is on the boards now, and we're ready to go when you are, Samuel.
And I'll give a little bit of a preface to this. This was at the start of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and hopefully that doesn't touch any sore point. But I was very saddened by the events as they were starting, and now, of course, here we are. This is called A View Through a Tube. Friday, February 18th, 2022. A dog snaps. A tree falls. A sudden small explosion a ways away. No need, worry you. A grain of sand, a strand of not so. Nocturnous riddle, yet a brickwork life continues among the shelling concerns of invasion.
Great read. Great read. Go ahead, Laurent. Start us off, please.
Yes, I'm absorbing what's written here. I'm assuming A View Through a Tube, the beginning of the invasion, if that's what you referenced. On television, and what does the tube show us? A dog snaps, a tree falls, a sudden small explosion a ways away, That's a wonderful description of the scene without preamble, as we view it, you know, the explosion, there's war, there's artillery, it's coming our way, but no need to worry. A grain of sand, a strand of knots, a nacreous riddle, and I can almost see that strand of knots, the way bombs fall, where you get the sudden mushrooming followed by a line of mushrooms as each explosion goes off. Love the word, the use of the word nacreous. And then a brickwork life continues among the shelling. Yes, there's an invasion coming, but the demands of everyday life are paramount. So you follow your routine. You follow what it is that you do, despite the fact that there's an invasion possibly right around the corner. Strong poem.
Thank you, Vic. Thank you very much. That's exactly right. I put some things in there that maybe just subtly evoke imagery, an idea, emotion, perhaps, in the way I wrote it. Explosion, a way is a way. A way is a way. This is one way, this explosion, these explosions, the future is coming, and yet no need to worry. They don't want to cause alarm, but yet the alarm is there. And then to reflect on the individual's life, who has no power, no control over the events of history unfolding in front of them. Their grain of sand, a strand of knots, a nacreous riddle, like a strand of pearls, you know, clutching the pearls in the shock of the events. As you say, the brickwork life continues among the shelling, concerns of invasion.
And it's almost like a perspective of how it was minimalized, how something so horrific, how something so grand, something that obviously touched you, and when in the start of that awful war began, it touched you. But there's a voice here of, again, how life still goes on and how people don't take the situation maybe as seriously or as dire or as grandiose as it potentially can be. Things still goes on. The brickwork of life, everything that you guys have already said. There's a lot of depth to this, buddy, and I like how you do that in your poems. I like how, coming back to this now, several months later, I'm learning so much more about it. And I appreciate everyone else's comments. Very cool. I want you to take a minute to give the rest of us, like I did for Lauren, I want you to give the rest of us some advice. We're all poets here, all poetry, but how do you find success? What kind of advice can you give the rest of us?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question. I don't think I heard the question.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm just looking for some advice. As a fellow poet, what advice can you give the rest of us?
Write. Write a lot.
Yeah.
Even if you hate it.
And that works. That works. Maybe that's something I need to put on the wall, put on a post-it on the wall to remember, because, yeah, it really is that simple. Great. Great advice. Great answer. Go ahead, Pam.
Yeah, this is a wonderful write, and I like what both Lauren you think I remember my co-host's name? Jeremy. I apologize.
Wow, during Christmas,
I'm going to get into you for that one. I really like what you both had to say, and I have to agree. It shows that life continues, even during times of war. I really enjoy and appreciate the imagery in this and how the words themselves look practically they are caught in an explosion. And I thought the title was very clever, A View Through a Tube, because it could refer to the television, but it could also refer to the idea of, you know, the telescope, looking through something at something from a far distance where you're in the safety of where you live. And yet, and so, you know, it's at that looking at the violence of war, but from a very safe distance, you know?
Yes.
And, I noticed this is a poem that definitely speaks on current times and on current social issues, but, you know, war has for, centuries been a social issue. Do you find oftentimes you're able to and like to use your poetry as a voice for social issues? Do you purposely set out to do that, or do you find that it just happens sometimes that way?
Both. More so lately, I think it happens that way than before, earlier, but when I was more experimenting with device and less so, I guess you could say now, but more using tools than experimentation. And yet the title, I guess you hit on something that made me reflect that the title is as a dual meaning, or can be seen as dual meaning, not only viewed through the two as in television, but the two, the tunnel vision of history in the making. Some philosophers said that we can't understand the times we're in, and so we have sort of a tunnel vision of the future, history in the making, until we can reflect.
Very cool.
Love that. Love those comments. All righty, my friend, we have a time for at least one more. Where would you like to go?
The universe dies at the end.
I found it. Alrighty, it's up.
Another 10-year-old one called The Universe Dies at the End. The universe dies at the end. Where Thompson's cathode rays scatter, Charlie Chaplin's among the stars, MC squares, where Schrodinger's whiskey breath on the goose skin of his Swiss mistress, Epiphany, where Einstein's doubts crush every multiverse in a cosmological, where we drift in solar tributaries, with silver moons on slipknot tethers, where Prufrock was just the bullhorn of a salient child. Now, as the discrete steps of our purient entropy tiptoe across galaxies, the best view of this cosmic jump to light is always unadulterated yesterday's. When a sand reckoner's estimates prove limitless nothing, matter and wave and matter wave does not matter, when nothing is always ever never was.
Can you go ahead and drop the note on the bottom of this one, too? I think it's relevant. I think everyone wants to hear it. Can you drop that, too, please?
Can you read to the end?
Yeah, can you read the note there that you have at the end? It's a good note to add to this so everyone can hear it can't read off.
Yeah, this was something I was reading about at the time, and the comment that I made at the bottom online was, if the universe is accelerating away in all directions faster than gravity can eventually halt or reverse, as is currently believed, then the best view of the cosmic firmament is now and every yesterday. Therefore, every day that passes, there is less of the universe to see, and therefore less we can understand about the nature of the universe.
And that note right there was why I was so excited to talk to you tonight. I think you challenged me a lot of ways, in terms of your imagination. And that's what I really love. All of the stuff that you've done tonight. You do a lot more of this ethereal writing, a lot more of this universe exploring, even this great old philosophical playing around than we've been exposed to. So I encourage everyone to read more of your set list for those regards, because this is a lot of fun for me. I enjoy what you did on this, and I love the fact that I like all the nods, and I like the fact that it has me reeling. It has me wondering what could be, what is, what isn't, what was, what's tomorrow, what's yesterday. All of those questions that you put in that you so well captured in that author's note, I feel in the imagination of the body of this poem. It's a fun ride. I really enjoy it. All right, how about this?
Yeah.
You you have a lot of imagination. You have a lot of projecting in your poetry, a lot of creativity, a lot of, like I already said, imagination. If you could have someone stand up, because of what you said before about your performance art and all of that, if you could have any person, living or dead, stand up on stage and perform any one of your poems, who would you have up there representing you and your body of work?
Based on tonight, I think Lawrence, number one.
And, that's a good point.
Maybe as a good second, Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, Samuel L. Jackson would be pissed. He'd be pissed if he came second.
Well, those are great choices. No, I love that. No, I think there's a lot of passion. I love Lawrence's voice, and I think it'd be fun to have Samuel get up there and drop some F-bombs and creatively perform your work. Great answer, my friend. A lot of fun. Go ahead, Pam.
Yeah, I really like how this poem did make me think, and it was fun to listen to. Such clever wordplay. I especially like where Schrodinger's whiskey breath on the gooseskin of his Swiss mistress Epiphany, where Einstein's doubts crush every multiverse in a cosmological fist. You know, the wonderful, fun, and thought-provoking lines. You know, you just take a look at all these different people who have really asked those questions that make us think about the universe and the way everything, about creation itself and about the way the timelines of life and how they just seem to twist and flow and bend. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Go ahead, Lawrence.
Yeah, there is a line in here which is just perfectly describes the human race as discrete steps of our prurient entropy tiptoe across galaxies. That brought a huge smile to my face. You know, there are poets who are able to write very entertaining, very deep poetry, which is that completely science-based. Pam, you're going to have to help me on this one. Who used, remember that, I forget the names of the couple who had a show of their own on LNP years ago, and they always did something called Halftime?
Yes. The guy you're thinking of is Dave. I can't remember his last name, but yes. He used to always say science.
Yeah, his poetry was heavily influenced by science. A little too much so sometimes. It was less poetry and more science. But there are those who tackle the subjects of science and do it a very entertaining way poetically. This is one of those poems which not only delves into cosmological questions, wonders about Einstein's doubts, and beautifully written, for instance, in Solar Tributaries, with silver moons on slipknot tethers. That's just gorgeous. You do a very good job of blending science and poetry in this piece.
Thank you very much.
Excellent comment, Lauren. I totally agree. Everyone, that's about it. I apologize for not being able to get further down the list. I encourage everyone to check out Samuel Black's set list. I've been enjoying his poetry for some years now. He's very talented. When he does contribute, he's definitely going to get you thinking, he's going to get you smiling, he's going to get you appreciating his pen because he's a very talented poet. So please check out his set list. And then, of course, if you want more, always find the rest of his work here on All Poetry. I'll turn the mic over to you first, Samuel. Would you like to sign us off before I turn it over to Lauren?
Well, thanks for having me. It was a first for me in several ways, and I don't get out much. And so... maybe I'll be getting out a little more now.
Well, we'd love to have you continue to come and show up to any of our shows here on Late Night Poets. It's been a pleasure having you. And go ahead, Lauren, if you'd like to sign us off for the evening, we'd love you to do so.
I've got, first of all, I just want to express my appreciation for thinking my work was worthy of this. Number two, there are a lot of excellent poets, NAP, I have never heard of. Samuel Black is one of them. I went back and checked, and there's no history of messages between us. So really, there's no past, only the now, which is a great poem. And it just proves to me how strong the talent is on this particular website when poets like Samuel Black can enter my consciousness and I go, why haven't I heard of this guy before? Because you're well worth reading, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Pammy, you want to close the show?
Great show, as always, Jeremy. Enjoy hanging out with you. Congratulations, Laurent and Samuel, for being headlined, and thank you so much for sharing your time and your poetry with us. We love you all, our listeners, and have a good night, everyone.
Thank you very much.